you don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This podcast is a dramatization of fictionalized events that contains culturally insensitive language and violence.
Captain, you go for lock?
I'm go.
Bridges one locked on target. Ready to fire, your order, Commander.
Commander,
do I have permission to fire?
Commander, it's the wrong target! Hold! Hold! Hold!
Stand down, Sniper One. Copy that. Standing down, Commander.
God damn it!
Where do you want to start?
Let's just start with the basics, I guess. Let's start with your name, title, and why you're relevant to the story.
Okay, sure. My name is Dr. Sam Azadi. I'm the head of internal medicine at St. Joseph's Hospital. And when Gerald Hayes was in his standoff with the LAPD, I was called in to administer care for his hostage, Sergeant Dan Place.
And when you got the call, did you have any second thoughts or reservations about entering the building that night?
Sure, but did I consider not going in? No, never.
People really don't know how much danger you were in that night. Mm. And when comparing the timestamp on the police department's internal comms with the bar surveillance footage, it's pretty clear that you were the only person standing in the window at that time that they were considering a snipe attempt.
I mean, it's pretty scary if you stop to think about it, but I guess I caught a break.
And what about Gerald? Did he scare you?
No.
Why not?
I mean, to be honest, I pitied the guy. And obviously, I don't mean, you know, I'm not saying that what he did was right. Far from it. But I saw what they did to his son, so.
I want to play back for you the conversation you were having with Gerald after you finished stabilizing Sergeant Place and right before you left the building, because you say something really interesting that I want to try to understand more.
Mr. Hayes. Sorry I wasn't given a chance to get in here sooner. Maybe if I had, things could have worked out differently for your boy. I'm sorry, Ben.
Yeah, I'm sorry, too. Go on.
Hey! The doc! He's coming out!
Friendly coming out!
I've thought a lot about this. How could it have worked out differently for Niles?
Well, he needed urgent care, and what he got was the exact opposite of that.
Yeah, can you elaborate on that?
Sure, but I think it's important that I preface this by saying I have the added vantage point of having read Niles' autopsy report.
Obviously,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, so basically he needed a breathing tube on site, and he should have been placed on a ventilator as quickly as possible, and my hospital was less than 5 minutes away. The kid basically suffocated to death.
So in your expert opinion, let's say Gerald surrendered immediately and the medics were able to get Niles to the hospital.
Well,
right
then I'm almost certain that Niles survives.
Yeah.
You know, probably paralyzed for the rest of his life, but I'm almost certain he survives.
So by that logic, based on your medical opinion, it seems undeniable that Gerald is at least in part responsible for Niles' death, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking to assign fault, I don't see how Gerald doesn't share a portion of the blame. It seems like his behavior was negligent at best. But again, that's just my medical opinion. It's not a legal opinion, right? I don't know, you know, I'm just a doctor, right?
Yeah,
I'm not a lawyer.
I just have one more thing. When you said that you wish things could have turned out differently, mm-hmm. Gerald says, I'm sorry, too.
Yeah.
Did you get the impression that he was saying he was sorry, like he was sorry about the whole situation, sorry that the police dragged their feet in getting a medic or a doctor in there, or do you think that he was sorry for his actions, that that he didn't actually stand down.
Well, yeah, I just took it as sorry about the whole situation.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what was really going through his mind at the time, especially, you know, considering the state that he was in, you know? I mean, honestly, your guess is as good as mine. You know, this much I know. Niles needed immediate medical attention. He didn't get it, and it proved to be fatal.
Dr. Azadi's POV weighed heavily on me, in part because he's a medical professional, but also because he's probably the most impartial person that I've had the opportunity to interview in this process. And it's forcing me to face something about this investigation that I've been sort of doing this weird dance with. Previously, you heard what happened when I pressed Jace about Gerald's potential culpability and the way things went down that day.
Man, get this thing off me! I ain't doing this bullshit!
I'd be lying if I said that exchange didn't affect me. Because the truth is, I know I've been pulling my punches with Jace ever since. For lots of reasons. But if I'm being totally honest with myself, the main reason is fear. Fear that I might be misconstrued as a journalistic Karen of sorts. For not being woke enough to understand and empathize with the millions of people who voted Sergeant Place guilty. And to an extent, I guess you can say I feared being canceled or thought of as someone who just doesn't get it. If you remember back to episode 1, I mentioned how my fixation with the comment posted by @WilkinSassy is what started me on this journey in the first place, where she said, @GeraldOG is a hero for taking matters into his own hands. But Dr. Azadi's assessment not only flies in the face of that, it basically implicates Gerald. And of course, I'm not saying that this in any way absolves Sergeant Place and Officer Webb of their actions, but it does highlight for me how completely unsettled I am with how I should view everything that Gerald did that day. And so far, the best I can come up with is that all of these men, Gerald, Sergeant Place, and Officer Webb, are in varying degrees accomplices. Accomplices in the death of Niles Hayes. But at the end of the day, only one person bore the duties of a father. Only Gerald had an obligation to Niles that transcends time and space. And as admirable and selfless and courageous as it was for him to dive into the fray and protect his son when the cops were beating on him, well, shouldn't that same instinct have been enough to make him stand down to save his son as well? Bottom line, after talking to Dr. Azadi, it's just hard to argue the fact that Gerald fucked up, and it's reprehensible. So going forward, if I'm not drilling down on this point with Jace and others, I'm just not doing my job, which means, whether I like it or not, I have some difficult conversations ahead of me. And if I get canceled in the process, so be it.
Dr. Azadi came into the bar just as cool, calm, and collected as you want to be.
So, Jace, look, I just want to double back on something that came up in my conversation with the doctor about Niles' passing, and I have to ask you something point blank. Who, in your estimation, is responsible for his death?
Sergeant Place and Officer Well. Who else?
Yes, but have you given any more thought to the role Gerald might have played in his passing?
Come on, Kay. You back on this shit again?
Look,
what
autopsy report indicates that if Niles received timely medical care,
fuck an autopsy report, Kay. And I don't exactly call being paralyzed from the neck down.
Okay, but is there any part of you that thinks that Gerald made a mistake in not trying to get Niles medical attention
right away? What the fuck are you talking about? We did try to get help. I was there. I made the call and I... You heard the tapes.
You're right. I have. But one could argue that if Gerald had surrendered instead of digging his heels in, Niles would have been taken to the hospital.
One could also argue, Kate, that if those racist-ass cops didn't beat Niles to death, he would not have died. And my argument is better. Okay, so you asked me a question. If I think Gerald fucked up, the answer is no. Get to the next question.
Okay, so Gerald never expressed any regret to you about the way things went down. And what about you?
What about me?
Do
what?
Do you regret anything?
What? So you blaming me now?
No, Jace, but it's only natural to replay events that don't go the way that we want them to go and wish for some different outcomes.
Look, so I never should have let Niles drive my car.
But Jace, that's
not... No. Hold up. About saying had nothing to do with Niles getting killed, didn't it, though? You were just playing the shoulda, woulda, coulda game with me about Gerald surrendering earlier. Well, what if Niles took Gerald's hoopty instead of my car when he went to pick up them tickets? Niles never gets stopped by the police. He doesn't get pulled over. He don't die. What I regret, Kate, is the reason I had Niles take my car.
Which was what?
Ego. I didn't want him pulling up to a Beverly Hills office driving Gerald's busted-ass Oldsmobile because I thought it would make me look bad.
But, Jace, how could you have imagined that Niles would end up?
That's what I've been trying... That's what I'm trying to get you to get. Every black man in America has already imagined a thousand ways how this shit could go wrong. And really, you don't even need a fucking imagination because you keep seeing this shit over and over and over. What haunts me to this day is the look I saw on Gerald's face when I gave his boy my car keys. He knew it was a bad idea, but he didn't stop it because he didn't want to disappoint his son.
For the second time, Jay stopped our interview short, but this time he came back.
Oof. All right. What else you want to know?
So, setting aside right and wrong, guilt and innocence, who's to blame and not to blame? I mean, is there any part of Gerald's thinking that day that you just flat out disagreed with?
Hey, you need to be more specific.
Okay, like, you just didn't understand where he was coming from.
Look, I'll say this. I think the one place... Well, Gerald was off base and like almost delusional, was him holding on to this idea that he would be able to finish the trial. Without the police doing everything they could to stop him, even if that meant risking Sergeant Place's life in the process. Gerald had bagged them into such a tight spot that they were forced to protect something bigger than just one cop.
Which was what?
The system. And for most of the evening, G just could not see that. But the signs was everywhere.
Welcome back to the show. I want to pick up the conversation with something we were discussing during the break. Go ahead and talk about that.
Thank you, Ryan. It occurred to me that beyond the criminality of vigilante justice, which again, I do not endorse, pointing out that if Gerald Hayes is able to carry out a trial and execute a judgment through social media, this will be as disruptive to our legal system as Napster was to the music industry at the turn of the century.
Napster?
For more reason.
Ryan, if I may.
Yes, please.
To me, the most important thing is that law enforcement do the right thing right now. And to me, that means the police force needs to take control of this situation. And I just don't see how you let them get as far as thinking that they would be justified in executing a police officer and publishing that live, let alone be brazen enough to act as if they're as powerful as our courts. That's just unconscionable.
It's unconscionable.
So what are you saying?
Really?
Wait. Let me get to the point there. So what are you saying?
They have to neutralize the threat immediately. Somebody on the ground has to be working on that.
That was the moment I thought it might finally set in for Gerald. But when I looked over at him, he still had a vibe like it didn't seem to faze him.
And what exactly was it that you expected him to get?
That we was in deep shit. And it probably would have flown right over his head again. But Martin, of all people, may have been the one to finally get through to G.
Listen to this exchange from the surveillance cameras as Martin confronts Gerald.
You see what you did? Hey, Gerald, I am fucking talking to you.
Don't start with me again, Martin.
Now, how about you fucking stop? All right, because you have basically signed our death warrant.
What the fuck are you talking about?
What am I talking about? That guy just spelled it out for you on national television. Like, what do you think the police were going to do when they found out about your brilliant cop killer plan? Because all you've done is given them an excuse to come in here and kill us all. But please don't do it in the next couple of hours because I'm a complete fucking idiot.
Watch it, man.
No, I ain't been watching. I have been watching everything that's happened today. The cops killed your son, okay? And I saw that. But and I truly am sorry, Gerald. I really am. But I am not dying for that shit here
Martin,
today.
Chill out.
No, Jace. No, Jace. You chill the fuck out. Because I'm done chilling. Because this is just not my fight. It's not. And it's not yours either, Jason. You know it. Okay? But let me ask you something, Gerald. Huh? Do you really think Jace wants to ride this out with you? I've known this motherfucker for a long time, and he is just as selfish as I am, if not more. He just won't say it to your face because, you know, you guys are boys. But mark my words, when push comes to shove, he is going to cut you loose and go for self just like he did when you guys were kids when he ratted you out. Bet you didn't think I knew that, huh?
In a flash, Jace's reflexes, speed, and quickness return to him as he charges Martin, tackles him to the ground, and then pummels him with a series of wild punches.
Jace! Jace, come on, Jace!
Get the fuck off me!
Jace!
Get the fuck off me!
An enraged Jace wraps his hands around Martin's neck and starts to squeeze until...
Please, 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 please don't let that be what I think it is.
You thought Gerald killed Sergeant Place.
I did.
Seconds after Gerald fires his rifle into the ceiling, the throw line phone starts to ring. Listen to this phone call between Detective Patterson and Gerald.
Gee, what's going on in there?
It's under control, Detective. Everyone's fine. Just needed to blow off some steam.
Well, we have a lot of cops out here that would love to blow off some steam, too. Trust me, Gee. You don't want that. And I don't want that either.
While Gerald continues his call, in the surveillance video, we see Martin collect himself off the ground and stagger towards the front door when Gerald stops him.
Martin, hold up!
From the looks of Martin's body language, you can see a man who's bracing for the worst.
Take Jason with you.
Detective, I got two hostages coming out.
We got two coming out! Don't shoot! Don't shoot!
They took my feet out from underneath me so fast, had my head face down on the pavement and cuffed me before I even realized my hands were behind my back. But I could not have felt more relieved.
Martin recounts.
You know, I vividly remember thinking to myself at the time, like, thank God, like, over and done with, you know? But...
By what?
Like, I had no idea that, you know, that day would come to define me and follow me for the rest of my life. That it would be my legacy. And in that sense, you know, what I thought was the end was really just the beginning. You know? I mentioned before that people recognize me as the guy who recorded what the police did to Niles, and how people see me as either usually one of two ways. It's either, hey, you're one of the guys who stood up to the police. Man, good for you, man. Or it's, you're one of those police kidnappers, aren't you? The truth is, neither one of those bothers me as much as the third type of person.
Well, what's the third?
You see, there's this narrative out there that I'm somehow a sellout because I didn't stay with Gerald to the end. And you want to know the toughest thing about that? It's my people who are the ones who call me a sellout.
So if you could change that narrative, what would you want them to know about you?
That I'm the one guy who, without a doubt, didn't commit any crimes that day. I'm the one guy who videoed Niles getting brutalized from start to finish, which means I documented the truth. I protested Niles getting beat. I protested kidnapping a police officer. And I protested killing a police officer. And I'm a sellout? I'm not a sellout. I'm just a guy who ended up in a really bad situation who managed to get out of it.
So what does that say about you?
I'm a survivor, Kate.
As the SWAT team hoisted Martin off the asphalt and marched him away from the building, you can see him sort of look over his shoulder to see if Jace was behind him, but he wasn't there. Listen to this exchange between Jace and Gerald as Martin gets whisked away from the bar.
Jace, it's time to go.
Nah, I'm gonna hold it down with you.
Don't worry about that other shit. You think all these years I ain't know it was you? It's squash, man. We good, Chase. We good. Go on, man.
Gerald tells you to leave multiple times.
Okay.
He forgives you for that thing between you guys when you were kids, and you still stayed. Why?
I don't know. Don't get me wrong. I didn't look at it so much as I was staying to help Gerald in the standoff. I think it was more... this is my only real friend. He just lost his son, and I ain't gonna bail.
Plus what?
I mean, it was about me too. Other than sports, whenever things have gotten tough in my life, I've always looked for the nearest door marked easy way out. And I ran right through it. Not this time.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
This is a team photo from the police department's intramural basketball league. I've coached his squad with Detective Homer for 20 years now, but this is the only time we won the championship.
Homer looks the same. Wait, is that Sergeant Place?
It is. I forgot he was on that roster. He was a rookie on the force that year. Over here is a picture of me being sworn in at the academy.
As Commander Ammons offers me a virtual tour of his professional life by telling little anecdotes about the many photos hung on his office wall, it becomes clearer to me how intimate the fraternity among police officers really is. For some reason, I always saw Commander Ammons as other, the adult in the room, the sensible leader. And don't get me wrong, I still think that portrayal is mostly accurate. It's just incomplete. Knowing that Commander Ammons coached a young Sergeant Place back when he was a rookie on the force tells me that Ammons probably isn't quite as impartial as I previously assumed. Ammons is true blue. And at the very least, it's time to start asking the commander some uncomfortable questions too, just like everyone else at this stage of my investigation.
Please have a seat.
So, Commander, having seen body cam and dash cam footage from your officers during the Niles Hayes traffic stop, were you surprised at all by how aggressive they were from the outset?
I think if you look back at my actions and decisions that day, you get a clear indication of what behavior I thought was and was not acceptable, whether it was from police officers or otherwise.
Right. But respectfully, Commander, that's not what I asked. It's one thing to condemn inappropriate actions after the fact.
Well, I get your drift. But there's a context through which I view everything.
Okay, what's the context?
Look, I know that traffic stops and domestic violence calls are the most dangerous scenarios that our officers walk into on a daily basis, and each one is different.
Yes, and I understand that. I think everyone does. But now let's set aside the fact that there is an inherent level of danger in police work.
Well, that's my point, though, Kate. I don't know that you can ever take the threat of danger out of the equation.
Okay, fine. Danger is a fixed part of the equation. I don't want to argue that with you. But to the extent that you can, Commander, what I'm trying to get from you based on your prior interactions with Sergeant Place, does it add up that he or Officer Webb, for that matter, acted the way they did from the outset? Were there any red flags or other parts of the equation before this traffic stop that indicated something like this might happen?
If you look at Officer Webb's file, he had two complaints for excessive use of force that were resolved through mediation and another one that was still under investigation at the time of the Hayes traffic stop.
Okay, and what about Sergeant Place? Any complaints about excessive force?
None.
Any complaints or investigations about using racist language or having views that could be characterized as anti-black?
Sergeant Place and a handful of other officers were flagged for comments made in an online chat room about a racist meme that had been passed around. Okay, to my knowledge, that investigation was completed, and I believe all officers involved were advised to attend the department's racial sensitivity training program.
So, Basically, what you're telling me is that of the two policemen who pulled Niles over, one was being investigated for excessive use of force, and the other one had been involved in an investigation for making inappropriate racial comments.
Yes.
But both men were under your command, correct?
Yes.
Hmm. Commander, do you feel responsible at all for what happened to Niles?
As you pointed out, these men were under my command, so I am burdened by the fact that this traffic stop went so horribly wrong on my watch. And I'd be lying if I didn't admit that part of the problem that I think you're hinting at is institutional as well. But ultimately, our officers are accountable for their own actions, just as you or I have to be responsible for what we do in our lives.
And what would you say is the primary responsibility of your office?
Order. From the time I arrived on the scene that afternoon and on into the night, my every move was about finding a way for us to defuse this chaotic powder keg and restore order.
Okay, did it ever occur to you that your opportunity to ensure order was removing Sergeant Place and Officer Webb from active duty when they were investigated for police brutality and racism? I mean, isn't that your powder keg right there?
I'd be a fool or worse, Kate, if I didn't admit that your question is one worth asking. And maybe that's the lesson here. Defuse the little bombs before they become bigger bombs, like the one we faced that night. I don't have a problem conceding that, because as you know, by the time Dr. Izzati exited the building and then Martin shortly thereafter, I was facing a problem so big that regardless of how this thing started and who started it, we, the police, were boxed into a situation where we had to be proactive in determining the final outcome. At that point, I felt I didn't have a choice but to go on offense. And that's when I had Captain Flores take me and his team through the plan.
And what was that?
It was all very standard stuff. First, we'd cut the power. Then initiate a triple breach entry with a ram at each position. Breach position one was at the northeast plate glass window because that's where we assumed HT1, Gerald, would be. Breach position two was at the front door, and breach point three was on the west side window, which would pretty much have them entering directly into the main bar area. My men were given strict orders to maintain muzzle discipline. That said, I did at this juncture finally give them the green light to fire once the assault had commenced.
I asked Detective Patterson how he felt when he was told that the decision was made to take the building by force.
Well, that's the thing. Nobody officially told me anything. But it was pretty apparent by what was going on. The trailer was filled with SWAT guys, and they pretty much taken over the space. Close as anyone got to telling me they'd given up the negotiations was when Commander Ammon slapped me on the shoulder and said something to the effect of, if you get the HT on the line again, put him at ease for us. So yeah, that pretty much told me all I needed to know. So anyway, I had Officer Ramos patch me into the mobile phone just in case Gerald did call again, which I was pretty sure he wouldn't. As far as I was concerned, my work for the night was done. When I stepped out the mobile command unit to get some fresh air, I saw Hobbs and Homer seated on a bench near the break area. The two of them looked like defeated teammates who had just lost a big game. And so I went over to say what's up to them. And I noticed out of the corner of my eye, this woman sitting by herself. And I said to the guys, don't turn around. But is that the mother sitting at your 3 o'clock? They both nodded their head yes at the same time like they were part of a comedy act. I asked if anyone had gone over to talk to her. But this time they shook their head no. So, I went over there and introduced myself. Hobbs and Homer came too, but they sort of hung back. I think most cops would rather take a bullet than be the first to talk to a grieving mother.
Well, what was her mood like?
I'd say detached. I offered to have a grief counselor come sit with her as she waited.
What did she say?
God is my grief counselor, Kate. And since Detective Patterson wasn't telling me anything that I hadn't already learned scrolling through my phone, I told him exactly what I wanted him to do for me.
And what was that?
Michelle made it clear in no uncertain terms that she wanted to see her son before he came out of that building. And I told her if the opportunity presented itself, I would do everything I could to get her in there. But in reality, the way those SWAT guys were tooling up, I was doubtful there would even be a building to walk into by the time they were done with their assault.
So, Jace, after Martin leaves, what was the mood like for you and Gerald while you were waiting?
For me?
Yeah.
Each second that passed ratcheted up more and more pressure because I know what's coming next.
the police.
Yeah, and guns blazing.
And what was Gerald's mood?
Calm. Well, he thought he had it all under control. So, I figured since I'm staying anyway, I might as well try to talk to him again.
Listen to Jace convey his concerns to Gerald.
I hate to say it, man, but Martin was right.
About what?
Cops. Man, they're gonna bust down that door and take us out.
Raid or no raid, I'm gonna finish my business with that cop, you feel me?
Yeah, man, I feel you. I just wanted to make sure you knew what it is.
But what if there was a way to stop him?
What?
Did you know what Gerald was talking about there? He sort of trailed off.
No, and before we could get into it, Sergeant Place started calling out again.
Hey! I want to go home! Can somebody give me a phone? Please, I just want to call home!
Gerald walks over to the kitchen and through the double doors. Sergeant Place continues his pleas as Gerald stares at the policeman's desperation.
Please, Gerald. I have a wife named Susan. I have a 7-year-old boy named Dan. A baby girl, Ryan. She's 14 months. I just want to hear their voices one more time, okay? I just want to say goodbye.
When we go live, you can say your piece then.
Chase!
Sup?
Hey, take him back to the dining room. Give me your phone, too. I need to make a call.
Hello?
Hey, what's up?
Jace?
Nah, it's G.
As Gerald talks on the phone, Jace wheels the policeman back to the dining room and positions him on the stage where the wounded cop would then wait for nearly an hour. At 11:30 p.m. sharp, Gerald's user account goes live again on the Polycam app. In the surveillance video, we can see that Jace is recording. The millions of people viewing the live stream see the two-shot of Gerald and Sergeant Place seated side by side. A running tally at the bottom of the screen shows the votes updating in real time. The official number when Gerald logs on is 3,408,223 upvotes for innocent and 3,532,138 downvotes for guilty.
Sergeant Place. You got anything else that you want to say?
So right when Gerald goes live, the first thing he does is give Sergeant Place the opportunity to speak. But it's clear the policeman is fighting to contain his emotions because you just see him taking these long, deep breaths and sort of not being able to get any words out.
Colleen Sanders recounts.
And part of me wants to say that you could hear a pin drop, but that's not an accurate description of what it was like outside of Jace's 42 either, because there was plenty of noise from helicopters flying overhead and generators rumbling. But there was the eerie sensation of silence because all of the people, the protesters, the onlookers, the media, nobody was saying anything. And you just know instinctually, when there's that many people packed into one area, you should hear a crowd murmur, but it wasn't there. The only voices I do remember hearing was the radio chatter going back and forth between police that we were picking up off of our scanner.
The police radio chatter was Captain Flores giving orders to a SWAT team. In the surveillance video, you can see the captain standing behind two cop cars parked at 45-degree angles in the shape of a V, positioned immediately in front of the building.
Tell them to move into position.
SWAT team 1 in position.
SWAT team 2 in position.
SWAT team 3 in position.
Copy that, Captain Eagle. T-minus 1 minute. Stand by for my order.
And then all of a sudden, there was this loud cheer that swept through the crowd.
Confusion. Right. But why?
While me and my team were still huddled around the scanner listening to the police radio, we were, of course, also watching Gerald's Polycam live stream on our phones as well. So we pretty much know the police are moments away from launching an assault. And as the police are literally counting down the seconds before they make their move, that's when we hear a super loud roar from the crowd, and someone on the police radio chimes in and tries to tell the captain there's essentially an armed militia headed towards the restaurant.
Right, that was one of the police snipers.
Exactly. So then the captain or someone hears this and tries to issue an order to stand down, but between him and other people all trying to communicate on the same line at the same time, the police communications start coming across super distorted and basically unintelligible. One of the SWAT teams, the one that was also responsible for cutting the power, doesn't hear the stand down order. So they keep going as originally planned and cut the lights, then ram through the plate glass window that leads into the main bar area, and that's when they release a flashbang. Boom.
Commander Ammons tells us his thoughts in that moment.
When that flashbang went off, I thought all hell was about to break loose. You've got armed protesters who at this point have their weapons trained on us. SWAT is getting mixed signals or no signal at all, and who knows how the HTs are going to respond to this. So I take off running out of the command trailer, screaming no go, and literally put my hands on the lead SWAT team member to prevent them from entering the building. Luckily, the other two teams never breached. But now you have, I don't know, maybe 100 or so armed men with weapons pointed at us, the police, and of course my men are now taking aim back at them. And in that moment, I'm just praying that nobody starts shooting. But I'm also thinking, you know, how in the hell did this force mobilize on us so fast? Where did they come from?
Yeah, I got a phone call and my caller ID said Jace. But it wasn't Jace.
Who was it?
It was Gerald.
Hello?
Hey, what's up?
Jace?
Nah, it's G.
Big H recalls.
The first thing I wanted Gerald to know was that he had my sympathies. I'm a father too, and I think you already know, Kate, that I thought the world of Niles. So yeah, just a man-to-man talk.
Okay, but Big H, forgive me for being blunt. I've listened to the recording of the call between the two of you.
And?
Look, I'm just trying to figure out how and when Gerald told you to bring armed men to Jace's 42.
You can't figure it out, because he didn't ever tell me to do no shit like that.
Big H is right. Gerald never makes an explicit request, but he does say this. Listen.
If you need anything, I got you.
Yeah, it looked like one time I'm trying to take down the movement before we even finish where we started. It mean the world to me to get the homies to show up, show out.
What did Gerald mean by show up and show out? Does that mean gangbangers?
No. It's just some concerned citizens making their voices heard, that's all.
Okay, but how is it that they all ended up at Jace's 42 so quickly? And they all came armed?
This is still America, right?
Did you coordinate the militia?
Look, I put the word out to the community that I was headed down to Jace's 42 to stand up for G, for Jace, and for Niles. But no, I never asked anyone to bring a weapon.
As the police mounted their failed assault on the building and cut the power, Gerald, to his credit, never did anything erratic. Even when the flashbang went off, he didn't so much as flinch. Instead, as it became clear that SWAT had aborted their takedown efforts and the world around him was diving into a panic, Gerald coolly offered this stark message before ending his live stream.
Nothing is going to stop this trial from finishing. We go live again, 5 minutes before the vote closes.
Join us next time for the conclusion of Hashtag Murder.
Hashtag Matter, starring Eamon Joseph as Gerald Hayes, Jennifer Christopher as Kate Bell, Steve Harris as Jace Shaw, Haley Joel Osment as Sergeant Place, Pooch Hall as Martin Sims, and Snoop Dogg as Big H. Additional performances by Niall Bullock as Niles Hayes, Tarina Pouncey as Michelle Hayes, Monte Russell as Detective Patterson, and Alex Vaughn as Daryl Hanover. Hashtag Matter was written and directed by Dylan C. Brown. Our executive producers are Sandy Bailey, Lauren Holman, Dylan Brown, Winnie Kemp, and Eamon Joseph. Audio design by Wolf at the Door. Sound design and mix by Josh Falcon. Music by Jonathan Sanford. Edited by Darren Bowling. And our sound director is Alexander Kemp. Produced by Toby Lawless and Lucy Jones. Casting by Lawless Casting. Hashtag Matter is a production of Shondaland Audio in partnership with iHeartRadio and in association with Wolf at the Door. For more podcasts from Shondaland Audio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.